it's okay to disrupt a speech by someone you don't agree with? Is it okay to counter what you believe to be hate speech with violence? We're going to talk about a recent poll on free speech attitudes, and we will welcome your questions and views. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Before we speak about free speech, let's talk about pledge drives. And Bill Martins is here because this is our fall membership drive. First day of fall, first day of our fall membership drive. We are here to raise the money that pays for the programs that you enjoy, programs like this one. Give your support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Hey, last hour we heard from 15 donors.
Thank you.
Thank you very much to everyone who gave. This hour we're gonna push the gas a little bit. We're looking for a goal of 35 pledges, 3-5. Now, these hourly goals are important. They help us stay on track financially so we can keep the discussion going strong here on Wisconsin Public Radio.
And 2017 marks 100 years of broadcasting for Wisconsin Public Radio, and this fall membership drive is a great time to celebrate. Support the programs that make your day with your centennial gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
A large slice of WPR's budget pie, the biggest slice, in fact, is listener support. So while all of our funding sources, the state and federal governments and businesses, are important, of course, your contribution makes a huge difference. WPR is the amazing service that it is thanks to listener support. Give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You are a part of Wisconsin Public Radio's community of listeners, whether you've been listening for years and years and years, or just a few months. You can become part of our community of members, people who support the programs they value.
If you've never given before, start with a pledge of $10 or $20 a month. Your pledge of any amount makes you a member. It really does make a difference. And it all starts with your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Ready? One, two.
We have a hip new thank you gift for you this drive. It's the WPR beanie, and it comes in fashionable black with the WPR logo on the upturned cuff. It's made in the US and it'll keep you warm this winter. Both stylish and practical, we think you'll love your new WPR beanie. Ask for yours when you give $10 a month or more right now.
Make your donation in support of the programs you count on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Joy Cardine with Bill Martins, and we are here to raise the money that keeps WPR, that keeps this program on the air. Whether your pledge is $10 a month or something else, we appreciate and count on your gift.
And giving to WPR is so easy. All it takes is a few minutes of your time and a gift of any amount, say $10 a month. That donation will come back to you every day in the form of great programs. Show your support. WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and give as generously as you can.
At WPR, you get to choose how much you give. A contribution of any amount makes a difference. Here are some suggested amounts. Maybe you should pay the same amount you pay for per month for Netflix or cable, or how about your mobile phone service? Oh my gosh.
Yeah, exactly. Or coffee, which, like WPR, is probably something you look forward to every day. So pledge now. You pick the amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
All right, so we are looking for 35 pledges before this hour is over to stay on track to meet our goal. You can be one of those, and thank you. Thank you so much to Marcia and Rick from Madison, who say this is in honor of Joy's retirement. It's our first pledge drive donation. Well, that is wonderful, Marcia
yeah.
and Rick. Wishing Joy all the best, but wow, she'll be missed.
Indeed.
Thank you so much. And I will miss you and loyal listeners and generous listeners, listeners who don't have to give but do give because they understand that this service would not be here without them. WPR.org or 888-202-2550. 52. Make your pledge of any amount to support this program and all of what you enjoy on Wisconsin Public Radio.
And we've got a little thank you gift for those of you who are able to give $10 a month. We've got a WPR beanie. This is a fun word to say.
Yeah.
Are you going to put that on?
I think of it as a stocking cap, not a beanie, but I guess it's a beanie.
Yeah, it's like a black, you know, winter hat. It's got the Wisconsin Public Radio on the front in fall colors, by the way, may I point out.
Should I put it on?
Orange. You should, and keep it on the whole
rest of
the
morning. Michelle Johnson, our executive producer, is here with a camera, so I don't know, though. But
She's actually putting it on. We're
it's not
going to
go over my headset. So,
okay.
That's the way
we get the idea. It looks good on you.
Anyway, what is the donation for that?
$10 a month, and when you go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552, just go ahead and choose that WPR beanie gift, and it will be yours for the winter.
Rob has one. They're very attractive. I mean, it's not quite this design. Make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Thank you very much, Bill. We'll talk to you in a little bit. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. We are very happy to welcome in our next guest to talk about free speech issues, and we will also talk about some media and politics as we go along. Very happy to have with us Mike Wagner, an associate professor in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at UW-Madison. And he joins us in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning. It's good to be here.
It's good to have you back here. We frequently ask Mike to talk with us about issues regarding media and politics. And when we saw these items in the news, we thought of him right away. There was this survey by the Brookings Institution that we wanted to get your reaction to. In essence, one out of five of the respondents to this survey said they thought it was okay to use violence when confronted by a speech they found objectionable or what they thought was hate speech. What's your reaction to that?
Well, my first reaction is that that's relatively consistent with how numbers of this sort have looked for a long time. There's been a strong undercurrent of a small but real subset of the population that believes violence is a strategy to use to overcome questions related to speech that people don't like. It's never something that approaches a majority in our country, but it's certainly something that's there. And there are lots of factors that contribute to whether that number moves a little higher or a little lower, including the rhetoric that our elected officials use. And so the more inflammatory rhetoric is from those who are in charge, the more accepting of violence people become.
Yeah, and the headline, it was an opinion piece, I think, in the Washington Post that just said that this writer found it extremely disturbing that young people today thought it was okay to use violence, because these were mainly college students that were answering this
question. The survey, I think, was of college students, but those numbers are similar for people of all ages.
Yeah. So they were also asked about whether it was okay to disrupt speakers who they didn't agree with from speaking. And that's been known to happen in on college campuses from time to time.
It has. There have been lots of high-profile cases where protesters have showed up in an organized way to really try to disallow the speaker from having an opportunity to speak. And then there are other times when people just boo statements they don't like or hold up signs expressing their views in response to the speaker. And, you know, that thing happens fairly regularly on campus and are also a part of free speech protection.
Yeah. So you're saying that this is protected by free speech, our First Amendment?
The First Amendment doesn't require us to be kind to each other. The First Amendment is not a civility amendment. The First Amendment says that the government can't punish us for engaging in speech. And so there's a big misunderstanding, I think, in the public about and on campus and everywhere, really, about what it is that means. Private universities can regulate speech in ways that public universities can't. Private companies can in ways that public companies can't. So when Jemele Hill, the Sports Center anchor on ESPN, tweets Donald Trump's a white supremacist, ESPN's a private company. If they want to punish her or fire her, they could, as compared to if someone working in the government, you know, said that same sort of thing. And so there are lots of different kind of elements to this, but civility is not required by the First Amendment.
Yeah. But should we be at all concerned, though, that young people or anybody doesn't want to even hear what another speaker has to say?
I think that it's better to have most ideas debated in the marketplace and have people decide what's important and what's not. But it's also the case that the decision not to allow someone to bring their views is a market decision as well, is to say, you know, if you're someone who has incredibly hateful ideas that the majority of people don't like, it's reasonable to say we don't need to spend our time hearing those, and not even necessarily our time, but also our resources to protect someone who might be the target of different kinds of behaviors that bring real cost to universities. How much money should a university have to pay to protect someone who's going to come and talk for 60 minutes one time? Is it $100,000? Is it $500,000? Is it $1 million? And so there are real questions about that. By the same token, it's incredibly important for people to be able to understand and deal with views that do not match their own. And I think there's a continuum of different kinds of views we might think about, and the range that people in the survey were speaking about is pretty disturbing. You know, the questions would just say, if people came to campus to speak with things that you don't like, you know, would it be okay to, you know, ignore those, disrupt those? And people were really willing to do that. And I think it's probably better on college campuses and everywhere to give people who are seriously sharing a view that has some place in the marketplace, people should listen to them and then respond to them as well.
Yeah, in this survey, 60% of the college students surveyed said the First Amendment requires public universities match an offensive speaker with one who has the opposite point of view. But that's not true, is it?
No.
but the state of Wisconsin wants to make it a little bit more even, doesn't it?
There's a lot of pressure, I think, from the state legislature regarding issues of campus speech, including proposals to punish students who engage in disruption to the point of expulsion from the university, potentially, for doing it more than one time or a couple of times, depending upon the details of the proposal. And so there are moves to punish students for engaging in their own free speech behavior in a free speech situation, which is a little ironic. And it's just interesting. It's been interesting to me, and I'll probably get into a little trouble for saying this, but it's my last time with you. So, you know, a lot of people who want to regulate speech on campus aren't willing to meet with their constituents, are willing to have people sign loyalty pledges to come listen to them at rallies. These are things that they might call snowflake behavior, and it's not the kind of thing that is promoting free speech in the least.
Yeah, the state budget that was signed yesterday by Governor Walker includes $1.5 million for the Tommy Thompson Leadership Center at UW-Madison. $500,000 of that is to sponsor speakers around the state. It's a bipartisan endeavor, though Republican State Assembly Speaker Robin Voss said when it was proposed, "Far too often we feel like there is only one legitimate viewpoint on campus. This is just going to make sure that we have diversity of thought." Any problems with having a diversity of thought?
I think that's great to have a diversity of thought, and I think the Thompson Center has a real opportunity to do outstanding work in bringing diverse voices to campus, but also helping students think through major questions of leadership, which I think is another purpose of the center. And the political science professor, who I think is going to be kind of the faculty person in charge, is committed to all of those kinds of things. And so I don't have any objection, and I don't know that there is a serious number of people on campus that have an objection to bringing a diverse set of voices to campus. And honestly, I think that we do. I mean, since I've been here 6 years, and I can remember in the last 6 years, Dinesh D'Souza being on campus, very far to the right, Ta-Nehisi Coates and Ezra Klein, and the author of Just Mercy, and Charlie Sykes, the popular radio host in Wisconsin. You know, so there's a wide range of people who already come to campus, and the Thompson Center will only increase that diversity, which is terrific.
The survey included questions about shouting down or shouting over people saying things you disagree with. Drew on Facebook says, "So these folks are using free speech to shut down free speech? Okay. Protesting is fine if done in accordance with local, state, and federal laws. Any lawbreakers should be arrested." I disagree with that.
I think that's, you know, that's a fairly reasonable perspective. People have the right to protest speech, and we've always, you know, had that right. There have been times when the government has tried to limit the constitutional protections, beginning almost immediately with our, in our country's history, with the Alien and Sedition Acts, saying we have freedom of speech, but don't say bad things about the government, which is a peculiar law to pass when we have free speech. To punish speech about speech is a peculiar position.
And on Facebook, we have a number of our followers in a disagreement. John says, universities are not public spaces, so when students shout down anyone, they are not interfering with free speech. He likens it to a business and says tuition isn't free, so college is not a public space.
Well, it depends. Part of it depends, I think, on whether the university is a public university or not.
Yeah, we get the UW-Madison gets taxpayer dollars.
About 14% of our budget comes from the public. And so in that respect, and others, we're a public university. But free speech does not mean the right to a captive audience. That's a different bar. Is it annoying when a protester won't stop yelling and the hundreds of people who came to hear a speaker can't hear them? Yes, that is annoying. Is it violating that speaker's free speech rights? No, they're not being punished by the government.
And 4 in 10 of the college students surveyed said that the First Amendment does not protect hate speech. Are they right?
Well, that's always a question for the courts, but usually that sort of speech is protected. There are speech, you know, there's examples of speech that aren't protected that usually incite violence and things of that nature. Speech or behavior of the news media where information is reported that is false when the provider of that information, usually a reporter, knew that it was false, is not protected, but otherwise it is. And so, it depends upon the court, but there's a long history of protecting that sort of speech.
Yeah, we're gonna take a break, and then we will take calls for Mike Wagner, an associate professor in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at UW-Madison. If you have a thought on whether it's ever okay to counter a speech that you disagree with violence, or whether you think it's okay to shout down or boo someone you don't agree with, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about free speech issues and attitudes. So we'll talk more about some media and politics issues as we go along with our guest, Mike Wagner, an associate professor in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at UW-Madison. But before we continue that conversation, Bill Martins is here because we are in our fall membership drive and we need your support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And Joy, we're looking for 31 more pledges in the next 25 minutes or so. Your gift right now is so important. Please support the programs you rely on every day here on WPR.
Thank you if you've already given, and if you haven't, the time is now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, every day our team here on the Joy Cardine Show, Joy, myself, Keely Bultina, Nyasia Ellison, Michelle Johnson, we work hard to bring you a great morning of radio, and that's a pleasure because we know that you're curious and intelligent people, and we also know that you like to have fun and enjoy all that Wisconsin has to offer.
Yeah, really, Team Joy has been awesome, outstanding, the best producers and executive producer anywhere in the world, and I'm going to miss them. I'm going to miss them all, but this show will be in such great hands when I retire because the same team will be producing the same great programs, and Kate Archer Kent, our fill-in host, will be in this hosting chair, and she knows her way around the block. She's been here before, and the show is going to be in great hands and minds. friends, and I have great confidence in the future of the morning show. That's what it's going to be called, by the way, the morning show.
Yes.
I like that.
I do, too.
So, and thank you for being such a great audience and for being the reason that we do what we do. You can give one more thing, though, your financial support.
That's right. Your support makes these mornings possible. And well, we're sad that Joy won't be a part of the morning routine for much longer, of course, one more week. The Ideas Network Morning Show will continue with the same lively discussions and meaningful conversations that start your day. So give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Hey, Bill, I'm gonna call in, and I'm gonna say, now this is Kathleen from Madison. I'll start harassing you that way. Thanks to Seth from Oshkosh, who says, this donation is by wish of Nate and Sally to celebrate their wedding. What in the world?
Wow.
All right. Well, that's nice, Seth.
Congratulations.
Yeah, that's nice. I think you can make a donation for any reason you want, but I think
we'll take it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And in fact, that was someone celebrating a wedding. Here's a solemn one. Russell from Bel Air Beach, Florida, made a pledge, and he says, this is in loving memory of the dearly departed Mary Ann McNulty. So, we appreciate your pledge given in the name, your name in memory of someone. That's fine. But do make that pledge to keep this listener-supported radio service going strong. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And our monthly giving program, we should mention, is becoming more and more popular. In fact, we have more than 22,000 sustainers, and that number is growing day by day. So give it a try. You're going to like it. Just set up a monthly amount to come from your bank account or credit card. It's easy to get started with a gift of $10 a month. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We are looking for 30 more pledges to reach our goal of 35. So thanks to the five of you who made a pledge so far this hour. We can do it with your help on this, the first day of our fall membership drive. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Thanks, Bill. We'll talk to you a little bit later. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking with Mike Wagner, an associate professor in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, talking about free speech in a recent poll on free speech, where it was found that some people think it's perfectly okay to shut down speakers, to boo them off the stage, or even use violence to counter speech that they find objectionable. What do you think of that? What questions do you have? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Jack in Madison is with us. Hi, Jack.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me on. I just wanted to say there's already, limitations to our rights as Americans, like carrying a firearm, for example. You can't be a felon to carry a firearm. That's a limitation. You can't yell fire in a crowded theater. That's a limitation on a right that we have as Americans. And I think, the same thing goes for disrupting other people's free speech. You can't say that I have free speech, so I'm going to disrupt your free speech. If there's a market for people who want to hear a speaker, I don't think it's the right of somebody just because it hurts their feelings or that they're offended by it, that they can stop it from happening. I mean, I'm a pretty liberal guy, and it's amazed me over the past, year and a half or 2 years to see these uproars taking place on campuses. And it feels like when I was in college just 10 years or so, it seems like 10 years ago or so, it seems like everybody had more of a backbone or was less offended. It's getting kind of crazy now that people can't say things without offending somebody. And I don't know. So that's my thought, is that there should be limitations, and definitely tampering somebody else's free speech should be one of them. So thank you.
Thanks. Mike, you have a reaction to that?
Well, the first thing I would say is that I think the view that this is happening a lot is misplaced. There's a media machine that wants to promote the idea that college campuses are actively trying to curtail people's speech rights, especially those on the political right. And there are a few examples here and there, almost always of people who are genuinely not that bright. People like Milo Yiannopoulos or Ann Coulter, people who are not serious carriers of the conservative political message. It's like someone like S.E. Cupp on CNN or John McCormick of National Review or Bill Kristol. There's lots of serious people that come. And when people who come who've said incredibly hateful things about a wide variety of groups in the past, it's not at all surprising that people want to yell at them. But by and large, when conservative speakers or liberal speakers come to campus, they are not shouted down. They are not disrupted. They come and they speak, which happens on this campus all the time, which happened on this campus this week when Charlie Sykes, the talk radio former talk radio host from Milwaukee, came, gave a talk to a packed room at the WID, the Wisconsin Institute for Discovery, not disrupted in the least, took questions, went to a reception afterwards where the mostly liberal audience spoke with him and others who were there. And that's what usually happens. And I think we lose sight of that too often.
Yeah. Speaking of Charlie Sykes, he was our guest yesterday
right,
at this
yeah.
time, or yesterday at 8. And his new book is How the Right Lost Its Mind. So here is a conservative who's kind of questioning what happened to conservatives.
And I could see the argument, oh, sure, Madison is happy to bring in somebody to their campus when they're a conservative and they're being critical of conservatives, right? I mean, I can understand that pushback, but, you know, Dinesh D'Souza is not that yeah. way. Speaker Paul Ryan is not that way. They've both been to campus in the last 2 years.
Right, and actually, I brought up the Charlie Sykes because in his book, part of that talks about when he was a talk show host on WTMJ in Milwaukee, and he was questioning his own role in creating the atmosphere that we have in politics today. And he was talking about the echo chamber that people all, you know, all conservatives flocked to listen to his show and the other conservative talk show hosts, and you didn't hear other viewpoints, and then you dismiss the other viewpoints, and you name call those other, you know, those are liberal
right.
sissies and that kind
right.
of. Talk some about how, I mean, I know you've kind of studied that.
Right. You know, one thing that I think is sort of fascinating is one of the premises behind conservative talk radio was the mainstream news media are liberally biased, and therefore there must be a counterpoint yeah. to express more conservative views. And for a long time, there was the view that that was healthy because you would have the expression of conservative views, the expression of middle-of-the-road views, the expression of liberal views, depending upon different sorts of media choices. One thing that seems to have happened over time in the talk radio world, although this predilection of thinking happens to people regardless of their ideology, it's not just conservatives who do this, but in the talk radio world, regularly what would happen is hosts would say, well, the people you can't trust are the news media because they're lying to you, they're biased, they frame issues in ways that aren't fair. And so when people like candidate for President Donald Trump would say things that, you know, were not in the realm of being true, and someone like Charlie Sykes would say, that's not true, because I read it in the Washington Post or the New York Times, as listeners would say, wait a minute, we're not supposed to trust those people. So why would we trust their fact check now, especially of a candidate that we like? And so the lack of trust of referees has become a major problem when it comes to our society trying to figure out what's true.
John in Boaz is with us. Hi, John.
Hi. I am putting a petition together to make the Best of the Joy Cardine Show.
What's the petition going to ask for, John?
It's going to highlight your best of on the radio that you can buy and listen to in your spare time.
That's very nice. You know what? You don't have to buy anything, John. All the shows that I have done since forever are going to be archived on WPR.org. They're there now, and they will be there in the future. I don't think they're stripping all those shows off of the website.
Good, because that brings up my subject, is what happened. I'd like your guest to comment, speaking of not being censored, of what happened in Kent State not too long ago, and you can't yell fire in a theater.
What mean? Are you talking about the students who were shot by the National Guard at Kent State, or what happened?
Yes, that would be the worst case scenario of freedom of speech, where the government crossed the line, and so did the. That's just like Donald Trump saying that both of them were wrong. You know, the white supremacists in North Carolina,
Yeah, there's a more current example, I guess. I know that received quite a bit of attention when that happened, that the president blamed all sides for the violence and said both sides were to blame.
And President Trump took a lot of grief for that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of complaints saying that it's just not appropriate to compare people protesting hate speech with people who are white supremacists, including one of whom who killed someone else at a rally. And so, you know, that's an example of free speech working its way through the marketplace. Someone says something that's not quite tethered to basis in fact, and others object loudly and regularly through lots of different channels, not just the news media, but social media and with their friends and other kinds of things.
You know, speaking of President Trump and media coverage, another thing we wanted to ask you about was a poll by the conservative media watchdog group called the Media Research Center.
Mm-hmm.
It recently issued a report that says 91% of nightly television news broadcasts about Trump in the last 3 months were negative stories. So does that surprise you? Does 91% of negative stories show some sort of anti-Trump bias?
I'm not sure that it does. So during the campaign, the amount of negative attention Donald Trump received was roughly equivalent to the negative attention Hillary Clinton received. And so I can't speak to the veracity of the Media Research Centers or Councils, I forget their name, study itself. I'm sure it's the case that Donald Trump has gotten a lot of negative coverage. And so the question is, why is he getting it? He's deeply unpopular. He's had no major legislative victories. Leaders from around the globe are regularly insulting him. These are all negative things. And so there's no requirement for the news media to go look for the positive. They're reporting what's happening, and they're trying to adhere to the verifiable truth and uncover the truth as much as it can be uncovered. And right now, most of the news that's available about the president isn't terribly positive. If the economy really picks up, if his approval rating goes up, we might expect the news media to report those stories and see those numbers change.
The Media Research Center argues that President Obama's coverage was not as negative because his policies were in line with the liberal media. How valid is that argument that the liberal media treated Barack Obama with kid gloves and they're going after Trump because they want to topple him?
Obama's coverage was also more negative than positive. It was more positive than Donald Trump's coverage has been, but President Obama was way more popular than President Trump when he took office. And he also took office during a time of a financial crisis where the public is more likely to give the new president a little more leeway in getting started. President Trump took over with, you know, dozens and dozens of months of consecutive economic growth and, you know, other kinds of things that maybe made the public a little less patient for success, especially because a key part of President Trump's campaign was promising that success was so easy and it would happen immediately. And a lot of the things he promised have not yet come to fruition.
Stand by, Mike Wagner, associate professor in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at UW-Madison, and stand by callers who want to join in this conversation. We will talk more about media coverage of Donald Trump. We'll talk also coming up about a new online website, a social media site that was put together by the Republican Governors Association. Some people say this is propaganda made to look like news. We'll talk about that coming up. But Bill Martins is here to remind you that this is the fall membership drive, and we are looking for your support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Yep, we are looking for 23 pledges in the next 20 minutes or so to stay on track this hour. Your support keeps WPR's Ideas Network strong, so make your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I hope that you support Wisconsin Public Radio because it keeps you informed and enlightened, that you do hear from many different viewpoints over time. We don't necessarily have debates every single hour, but you will hear from from your legislators, Democratic and Republican. We just had Assembly Speaker Robin Voss on the other day. We had Republican State Senator Dewey Strobel on the other day.
And we had Minority Leader Peter Barca on as well.
That's right. And we had Charlie Sykes on yesterday. So we are bringing you a wide variety of viewpoints. We do try to present, when we're talking about a controversial issue, all sides of the issue. And your support helps us do that at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Again, we're looking for 22 listeners in the next 18 minutes to reach that hourly goal. We can do it. It's the first day of our fall membership drive, and we want to get off to a great start, and you can help make that happen by making that pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Ready? One, two.
We have a hip, new thank you gift for you this drive. It's the WPR Beanie, and it comes in fashionable black with the WPR logo on the upturned cuff. It's made in the U.S., and it'll keep you warm this winter. Both stylish and practical, we think you'll love your new WPR Beanie. Ask for yours when you give $10 a month or more right now.
Make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. 22 pledges to go to reach our goal this hour. And we can do that with your pledge of support.
That's right. WPR.org, 888-202-2552 is the way to do it. You can be just like Catherine from Appleton, who says, my gift is to help support full news coverage. And we just talked about, you know, bringing on all sides of a discussion, and that's something that we take very seriously here, and we'll continue to do that even post Joy's departure next week, or retirement, I should say.
Departure. I'm leaving this world.
Yes. So make that pledge of support so we can continue to keep providing those perspectives for you. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Yeah, thanks to Wendy and Mark in Madison who pledged. They say, I recently stumbled upon WPR, and now I listen to it daily. I want to help keep it going.
Great.
So that's wonderful. Somebody who is a newer listener. And Michael from Madison pledged in honor of me. Thank you very much, Michael, for that pledge. I really, truly will miss our listeners who give freely to help support a service that they value. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And you know what else I'll miss from callers is they can ask some of the best questions, and they can ask questions that guest politicians have a little harder time dancing around. So
they do, yeah. I mean, we as a team come up with questions, but it's great to have the listeners and their collective minds to pose those questions that perhaps we didn't think of. And it's great.
And it's not just questions of politicians. It's lovely to hear perspectives on, you know what, I'm a farmer, or, you know, boy, when I was working as a waitress, this is what happened.
Or someone who's directly affected by this issue someone who's just talking about it.
Right. And so that's why I really do love this. I really do love this format. I really do. And I hope you do too. And I'm glad that you're online. We'll get to your calls in just a moment and we'll get back to our discussion. This is something, though, that we do have to do from time to time because we need to raise money from listeners to keep this service going strong. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about media and politics with Mike Wagner, an associate professor in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at UW-Madison. Let me get right back to callers as our lines are full. Sarah in Zion, Illinois is with us. Hi, Sarah.
Good morning, Joy. Sorry, my comment is that I think the people on the left need to be really careful and not engage in behavior that gives the right-wing extremists and the media a tool to depict the left-wing as nuts and violent. And I think that so they should not shout people down, and they should never be violent against people whose speech they don't like. And
so that will give the media and critics tools to depict the protesters as nuts. Mike?
Well, I can understand that strategy. Often, and you know, politicians follow this strategy too, where they strategically engage in not talking about something so as to avoid controversy or looking biased or being in a position where they could be made to look bad. And I think the caller is saying, you know, it's possible and probably probable that, you know, liberals could be made to look bad when there are incidents where someone is shouted down and that kind of thing. But I think to say then the overall strategy should never be to do that is one that's a little troubling. So what if the speaker says, okay, audience, what I want you to do is go outside and find every person who looks different than you and beat them up. Maybe someone should shout that down. Maybe people should start yelling and prevent someone from saying something like that. And so I don't think it's the case that it's never a good idea to disrupt a speaker. Sometimes speakers say things that deserve disrupting.
Jeremy in Racine is with us. Hi, Jeremy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. One of my concerns is in regards to Antifa. There's countless YouTube videos. It's very difficult not to run into a few YouTube videos here and there in regards to kind of protesting. And the way that they go about doing it is in a violent manner, throwing rocks, spitting in people's faces, sucker punching them. They don't even know who they're really engaging with. They just realize that they feel that if anybody shows up to a right-wing rally is obviously some radical right-wing extremist, and really it could be anybody. It could be a pedestrian just stopping by wanting to hear the other point of view. It could be a journalist. It could be basically anybody, and you feel that there's a lot of broad brushing. There's really no guidance, and it's just turning into a chaotic situation where people are no longer engaging in civil obedience and maybe articulating their point of view as a counter. They're just resorting to disruption by violence.
All right. Do you have a response? And do you think, we touched on it a little bit earlier, do you think we need to be more civil about these matters, Mike?
I think under most circumstances, civility is a pretty useful way to engage in political discussion. But it's always interesting to me that whenever someone, not always, oftentimes, when someone wants to say, I understand what the protesters in Group A are saying, and it's the counter-protesters in Group B who are the problem, we shouldn't be so broad brush about Group A, but everybody in Group B is terrible, is painting that other group with the same broad brush that they don't want Group A painted with. And so I think it's important to think about the fact that, you know, people who are in groups on any kind of side of a political debate are often, you know, fairly heterogeneous and diverse and have a different set of views and may be at a protest for a variety of reasons. But legislating what the behavior should be of people expressing their political views is a difficult and sometimes dangerous enterprise.
Let me ask you about another issue that we saw in the news this week that we wanted to get your take on. The Republican Governors Association launched a website that looks like a news website.
Right.
It has a little note at the bottom, paid for by, but its Twitter has no reference to the fact that the Free Telegraph is actually a partisan agency. Its Facebook page is listed as a news or a media news company. So what do we make of the Republican Governors Association using this to get out news, like news in quotes, like the accomplishments of Republican governors?
This sort of behavior is on the rise across professional and political realms in our country, and a student of ours who just graduated with a PhD, Michael Myrer, who's a professor out in Pennsylvania now, studies these groups. And so groups form to and live under the, what looks like they're a legitimate news organization when in fact they are not. This happens a lot in sports, right? So like the Green Bay Packers have their own people who write on their website, write stories about the Packers, you know, all professional football teams basically have mm-hmm. a group like this now, same with colleges. Now it's really entering the realm of politics. And you might, you know, remember or just notice when you're reading a magazine, often the middle five or six pages are a paid insert that look like news stories about a prescription drug or something else, but they're not. And now the Governors Association is doing, you know, this same thing. And that has the potential for people to believe things are news stories where reporters are trying to uncover the truth, which is different than an advertisement, which is what these things are.
Yeah. This phrase, fake news that crops up often from President Trump and his supporters about real news outlets, but there also have been some flawed reports. How does a move like this from the Republican Governors Association change the conversation, if at all, about fake news?
Well, I wouldn't call it fake news. Even advertisements are supposed, you know, to be accurate, and these organizations might be writing things that are true or that are accurate, but they're probably framing them in ways that make their side look good, and they're probably not seeking out opinions from another organization. And so, to bring it back, you know, it's not just politics, right? So if you are, you know, writing for the Dallas Cowboys news site, you're probably not writing about what their running back Ezekiel Elliott is accused of in domestic violence. You're probably writing about, you know, them getting ready to play their other team. And so you're not telling a comprehensive take on the subject you're covering. And that's the worry with things like what's happening with the governor's group.
Yeah. So what, do you have any advice for those of us who, you know, look for different news sites online and or on our social media sites, how we can, not be just reading propaganda?
Well, I would say first, if it's a new organization that you haven't heard of before, try to see if you can figure out just by Googling who pays for that group. Is this funded by, you know, a partisan political organization? That's your first clue that might be information you like, depending upon your party point of view, but it might not be comprehensive, fair-minded, objective, balanced information that will help you make great decisions about whether you should be supporting these political leaders or not. So trying to figure out who pays for them. Try to notice when you're looking at stories what range of views are offered, and what's the quality of those range of views. And so is it the case that they're always quoting a Democratic member of Congress and then the Republican is someone who worked in Republican politics 40 years ago? Well, that's not very fair, right? And so it's important to think about who are the sources and stories as we read them as well.
Yeah, boy, we're almost out of time, but I wanted to also, lots of different things, I just wanted to hear what you thought. Facebook is in the news about ads that it was running that targeted people who declared themselves anti-Semitic. Now even Facebook is turning in information to congressional and federal investigators over who was buying these ads. Do you have any reaction to what happened there?
Well, I think a lot of people who are deeply committed to deliberation in politics and transparency in politics are quitting Facebook over these kinds of issues because Facebook doesn't always reveal who are buying ads in their organization and how they're trying to target particular kinds of people where those advertisers might be trying to sway election outcomes in ways that they really can't be detected. And so those are the kinds of things that people who really care about transparency in our elections and our government ought to be worried about.
Yeah. Well, we're out of time. So I want to thank you, Mike Wagner, for being here. It really has been a pleasure talking to you throughout the years, and I'm sure I'll hear you again on Wisconsin Public Radio.
It's my pleasure, and it's a great fun for me to be here during your last several days. I've loved your show and always love being on it. You ask great questions. We'll miss you.
Thank you very much. Mike Wagner is a professor of journalism and mass communication at UW-Madison. Bill Martins joins me for the last few minutes of this hour as we are working toward our goal of 35 pledges, and we have 18 to go. Can we do that, Bill?
I think we can. We need everyone to act right now, though, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Your pledge of support is so important. It goes to ensure that the programs that you depend on here on WPR will be here to stay for a long time to come. Again, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
You know, new members are important to Wisconsin Public Radio, so a big thank you to all the first-time donors who have pledged so far this hour.
Yes. And if you've never given before, know that your new membership keeps Wisconsin Public Radio the strong, reliable station that you depend on. So you decide the amount, maybe that's $10 or $20 a month, and then you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You're busy. It can be difficult to squeeze in all the day's to-dos, but no matter how challenging your schedule is, it's always fast and convenient to make your contribution to WPR Online. Just go to WPR.org. With secure online pledging, you can pick the amount you want to give, how you'd like to pay, and even ask for a thank you gift. It's secure, quick, and pledging your support is a simple, easy task that has a huge impact. It funds all the in-depth news, thoughtful conversations, and excellent music and entertainment that are a part of your everyday, no matter how busy things get. So give now at WPR.org. Of course, you can always give us a call at 888-202-2552.
I'm Joy Cardine with Bill Mertens, and we have just 1 minute to convince you to make a pledge of any amount to support the programs you value at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
18 more pledges is what we're looking for in the next minute and change here, and that'll help us reach that hourly goal. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You might be saying, how much should I give? Well, that is completely up to you. Your contribution of any amount will be turned into great programs, that will keep you informed and entertained all year long.
Make your pledge right now in the amount that's right for you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thank you, Sarah and Tyler from Appleton, my hometown. They say we made a new sustaining pledge today, and we want to wish Joy the best of luck in her retirement. Thank you so much, Sarah and Tyler. And I'll see you sometime in Appleton. I get back there frequently. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.